Ahoy hoy, all you true sons and daughters. I'm John Miller, and this is Locked On Mizzou, your destination for Missouri Tigers football and basketball talk 5 days a week. As always, search for the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you might find them. It'll be there, I promise. And you know what? Why don't you share it with a friend? That'd be helpful as well. Help grow this thing. We're kind of brand new over here, and we're in a bit of a transition period from the old For Old Missouri show. So let your friends know that you're enjoying Locked On Mizzou. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, as a huge Kansas City Chiefs fan, I'm well aware that the world is on pins and needles about Mr. Patrick Mahomes, and I am no exception. And you know what? I've got a bit of a Patrick Mahomes quick take at the end of this here podcast. But first, this is a Mizzou show. So as you know, we got to get to the Mizzou topics. And coming up, I'm going to tell you who I think are the best linebackers in the post-Barry Odom era. Post-Barry Odom? What? We're in the Barry Odom. No, I mean post-Barry Odom, the player era. You see, Barry played his last season for Mizzou in 1999, so I thought, hey, 20 years, that seems like a pretty good chunk of time there. So with that and Cale Garrett going down, I just thought it'd be interesting to put his career in a little bit of context, since we're assuming this is probably going to be it for young Cale. But first, you know what? Let's talk about our new legal pastime in America. A pastime that I like to call odds making, and that you might like to call gambling. But you know what? I think we should make this a recurring segment, don't you? Every Friday, let's take a look in to the action and decide if we, as Missouri fans and onlookers, if we should bet on Mizzou or not. And yes, that's exactly how I'm going to couch it. Should you bet on Mizzou or not? It isn't should you bet on Mizzou or should you bet on Missouri's opponent. No, ladies and gentlemen, I believe in a little thing called karma. I may not be the world's most religious person, but I do believe in karma, oddly enough. You can make whatever judgments you want about that particular juxtaposition, but frankly, even if you don't want to get all spiritual on me, it's just not an enjoyable experience to bet against your team. Now, I've never bet against Mizzou, but I've bet against the Royals before, and you know what? Even then, I didn't like it. It wasn't fun at all. I'm not as insanely passionate about the Royals, for instance, as I am about Mizzou, but just don't ever bet against the Tigers. It's not worth it. But having said that, when people say you shouldn't bet on your own team, I don't think that's correct, because if you can be objective enough about your own team, really you should have an edge. You should have an inside information. You should have an information edge on Vegas. You really should, especially, I'm going to tell you something right now, folks. In 2019, almost all of Vegas's lines are set by statistical models. Now, don't get me wrong. Those statistical models have been very successful, and they keep building new casinos. I can't remember the last time anybody shut down a sports book, but you can beat those statistical models if you have something that they're not factoring in. And if you're following Mizzou as closely as I do, I think you can do that on occasion. So more to the point, is there something we can bet on this week? Do we have an edge on Vanderbilt? More specifically, on the Mizzou-Vanderbilt matchup. Well, the line opened 21.5 everywhere I saw, mostly 21, and now the consensus line is 21. So it's exactly Missouri by 21 points. No real line movement there. That's basically been where it sat the entire week. So that tells you that that was a pretty good line that Vegas put out there. Now, at first glance, you might think, wow, 21 points on the road at an SEC school. That's a lot of points. And of course, you'd be correct. That is a ton of points. Three touchdowns, three full touchdowns in an SEC matchup. But you know what? I think you should give the 21 points and take Missouri this week for a few reasons. Starting with the fact that I think Vanderbilt is truly historically bad for an SEC team. I mean, they're one of the worst teams, based on their start anyway, that we've seen in a long, long time. And if you listen to my previous episode, you'd be aware that Vanderbilt got its clock cleaned by UNLV at home by 24 points. So the idea of Missouri winning by 21 is not exactly a stretch when you take that into consideration. Not only that, Vanderbilt happens to be 0-6 against the spread this season. Not great. Not great at all. Now, some people, again, I brought up this on the previous episode quickly, but again, I'm going to have to dismiss the idea of a trap game here just a tiny bit. And maybe I'm giving my own team too much credit here, but here's my thinking. Missouri already had its trap game. It already had its letdown game. It was called Wyoming. It happened in the first game of the season. I just don't see these guys looking past anybody at this point because they know they can get beaten by anybody. They've seen it. They've seen the proof right in front of their faces. They felt that pain. And frankly, this locker room, based on the little that I know of them, I just think they've got strong enough leadership that I don't think that's going to happen this week. I really don't. So, yeah, give the 21 with Missouri. I think that's a decent bet there. That's a bet that you're going to win 55% to 60% of the time. And that's the sweet spot, right? Again, that's another thing to understand if you're a bettor. Have realistic expectations. If you're hitting 55%+, you're going to make good money doing that. Then it's just a matter of volume at that point, right? And when you see the Bear on College game day and he's hitting 57%, including his last 12 in a row or whatever, that's insanely good over a long period of time. Stanford, Steve, those guys. I mean, I'm impressed that ESPN has two guys who are actually really successful bettors. So, heck, what are you listening to me for, right? But no, seriously, I think I have an insight on Mizzou here. And again, I believe Mizzou's the bet this week. And with that said, we will get to Cale Garrett and the best linebackers of this Mizzou millennium right after this. And now to Cale Garrett and those great Mizzou middle linebackers of the last 20 years. And you know what? I guess it really is the middle linebackers. That's who I've written down on my list. So if you consider, I don't know, Brian Smith an outside linebacker, which I don't think you would, but I basically was going with the middle linebackers here. There weren't as many outside guys as that stood out on the list to me. But, you know, generally that's been who has been the great players at that position at Missouri the last few years. So let's stick with it. Well, first of all, again, I am going post-Barry Odom here, but just in case you'd forgotten or aren't old enough to remember, Barry Odom was an Oklahoma kid that frankly wasn't athletic enough to be recruited by the Sooners or even down to Stillwater. But despite having an ACL injury at one point in his career, the guy just grinded and ended up, he's still one of the top 10 tacklers in Mizzou history and really just kind of the epitome of your grinded out, tough as nails, Larry Smith style player from another era, I would say. But aside from Barry Odom, after his era, to me, I have a tough time deciding between the next two players, between Michael Shearer and Andrew Wilson. Both guys, obviously, parts of two really good teams. Well, Wilson, I guess I was thinking Wilson. Well, they were both on two good teams. Wilson was on the 2010 team, obviously, they beat Oklahoma and the memorable 2013 team that Shearer was on as well. So, yeah, just to me, those guys sort of run together for me for whatever reason, to the point, again, as I stumbled over my words there, as you can tell, for whatever reason, in my mind, those guys just kind of run together. And if you want to make the white boy joke, go ahead. But that isn't really why. It's more just they were both solid middle linebackers that had similar skill sets, that four-year players that never played in the NFL or anything to any large extent, but just were excellent college players. So I would put those two guys kind of as 5A and 5B, if you will, on my list here. And at the number four spot, you know what? Believe it or not, I think this is where I'm going to have to put Cale Garrett. Now, some of you are probably shocked right now. You probably thought I was going to save Cale for down the list here, but you know, as great of a start as he had to this season, since his season was cut off, it's going to be really hard for me to place him ahead of these next three guys because of just the amount of time they put in, the total numbers they put in, and just the memorable moments that they had here at Mizzou. And again, nothing against Cale. I think it just shows you the great linebackers that we've been blessed with here at Mizzou. And honestly, it just makes me sad, obviously, that Cale, we couldn't have gotten to see how he finished off this season. I mean, obviously one of his touchdowns was of somewhat of a garbage variety, but hey, a touchdown's a touchdown, right? The bottom line is his coverage skills were amazing, his run skills were amazing, and for a short period here, he may have been number one on this list. The problem is he didn't quite put in the longevity for me personally to put him ahead of, for instance, my number three guy, Kentrell Brothers. Now, there's a guy, his last season at Mizzou, 2015, is obviously one of the least well-remembered seasons in school history for a variety of reasons. But you sure as heck can't blame Kentrell Brothers, can you? That guy was an absolute one-man wrecking crew that season. And honestly, without him making tackle after tackle after tackle at the second level of the defense just time and again, I'm not sure how good that defense is. You know, statistically, that ended up being a good defense. But, you know, I still remember Dak Prescott and Mississippi State exposing us a little bit. And, you know, I'm just saying Kentrell really flew under the radar to me, is now at this point flying under the radar, I should say, is really one of the more underrated players defensively for a while. It's now been long enough, people have almost forgotten about him. Well, I haven't. I really like Kentrell Brothers, and I think he's worthy of my number three spot of best Mizzou linebackers of the last 20 years. But number two, you know what? I have to go with James Kinney. Now, here's a guy that I went to college with. That's how long ago it was, folks. Woo! Way back in the olden days. Fire up the Charleston music. But to me, James Kinney, for as much talk as there's been over the years about how Larry Smith left the cupboard bare for Gary Pinkel after his departure, I think you got to say James Kinney probably had to be the best player that Larry left behind. And most importantly, at least in my memory, not only is he one of our all-time leading tacklers still at this point, James Kinney absolutely dominated the 2003 Mizzou-Nebraska game. I mean, dominated it. He was all over the field. Tackles for losses, strip sacks, the whole deal. He was incredible. Arguably even better than Brad in that game. Really. Go back and watch. And in fact, you can go back in the archives and check that one out. We did a watch along with the 2003 Missouri-Nebraska game. But anyway, that leads us to number one, which should be no surprise to anybody. Yes, it's Mr. Sean Weatherspoon. Yes, Sean Weatherspoon. No doubt number one. The only first-round draft pick on this list. He's an obvious choice. Not only, in my opinion, is he the best linebacker in Mizzou of this millennium, but one of the best personalities as well. Just a guy who really brings up the energy of your whole football team. You need these kind of guys. You can't just have a bunch of statistically minded guys on their iPad on a football team. It doesn't work that way. Don't get me wrong. You need some of that. You need some of the studious types. Not to say that Sean Weatherspoon isn't studious. What I'm saying is you need those guys on the hot days in August, those drudgery-filled days of practice when there's not a lot of actual football happening. It's mostly just coaches trying to break your will. Well, that's when you need a guy like Sean Weatherspoon the most. You need him to bring up the energy of the whole team, the whole program, and put you on the right path. And Lord knows he did just that. And considering Sean only played on special teams his freshman year, he still nearly became the school's all-time leading tackler. I believe he's number two, following James Kinney. Actually, you know what? I stand corrected. Sean is number three, two tackles, behind our departed defensive coordinator, Mr. DeMonte Cross, speaking of Barry Odom. And number one is James Kenney with 434 career tackles. Exactly 22 ahead of Mr. Sean Weatherspoon. Not too shabby. And yes, Barry Odom comes in at number seven. And you know what? Hey, Sean Doyle, shout out to you, by the way. I feel like he was left off the list as well. Number eight with 358 tackles. Kansas City's own Sean Doyle. So that'll be it for our Mizzou talk. But you know what? I have to weigh in on the Patrick Mahomes thing. And you're going to want to hear what I have to say. So here's the deal with Patrick Mahomes. As of this recording, it does appear that our dearly beloved quarterback leader has escaped serious injury. At least we certainly hope so. Now, easy for me to say, right? I didn't have my knee dislocated and put back into place last night, but Patrick Mahomes did. But fortunately, it looks like his MRI is clean, and the speculation is now he might miss a few short weeks, but nothing that's threatening his season by any means. No torn ligaments, nothing of that sort. Now, first of all, great job by the Chiefs last night to absolutely stomp the Denver Broncos anyway. My goodness, that offensive line with Joe Flacco's inability to get rid of the ball was something to watch, wasn't it? But anyway, what I really want to get into here is push back against the full-throated, loud people on the internet, on the television, on the radios, the radio waves, who are saying that, oh my God, I can't believe Andy Reid was stupid enough to run a quarterback sneak with Patrick Mahomes. Well, I can sit here and tell you right now, I was begging for them to run the quarterback sneak in that particular spot because it is, in fact, one of the most effective plays you can run. Because guess what? When it's third and one, fourth and one, an effective play means you got the first down. And nothing does that on a higher percentage of the time in those situations than the quarterback sneak. Now, obviously, what Bob Fesco, for one, who's a longtime KC radio guy, he was saying this, and I believe Stephen A. Smith was saying it on First Take this morning as well. Oh, you're risking injury by doing that. Oh, you're going to get him hurt, blah, 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 blah. Well, here's my counter to that. I said this on Twitter, and you can follow me on Twitter, at LockedOnMizzou. You can find me there on Facebook and Instagram as well, but I was asking, name me one quarterback who's ever been seriously injured on a quarterback sneak. Now, if you want to say Patrick Mahomes last night, okay, I'll give you that one. I'm saying before that. Who's the guy? Give me a name. Anybody. Are you yelling at me through your iPhone right now? I'm kind of doubting that you are because I've watched a lot of football over the years and I'm having a difficult time thinking of anybody. Now, I'm sure you can find an example of a guy who's hurt his shoulder, a guy who's gotten a concussion. I'm sure it's happened. But I can show you a lot more examples of guys getting hurt while standing in the pocket. In fact, the most gruesome injuries we've ever seen in at least pro football history, in my mind, Joe Theismann and then last year, Alex Smith. Well, both of those guys were standing in the pocket. It didn't happen on a quarterback sneak. By the way, the previous week, the previous Thursday, Tom Brady must have snuck the ball three, four, five times. I didn't see Stephen A. Smith going crazy then when their 41, 42-year-old quarterback is diving his head into the ground over and over again. I don't know. Apparently the Patriots and Tom Brady, who at this moment, especially in October, September, early season football, have you watched Tom Brady this year? Do you see how careful he is with the ball in the pocket? And yet here he is diving in for a sneak with reckless abandon, with no fear whatsoever. I'd say there's a reason for that. I'd say Tom Brady and Bill Belichick know something about football. Honestly, again, give me an example. Because if you're going to say that, oh, well, we need to protect Patrick Mahomes, maybe we should have sat him out this week to heal his ankle up. Now, that's an argument you could have made. It's a question I at least considered and asked in the past week. But to sit here and say, oh, well, they shouldn't have run the quarterback sneak, I'm sorry, that's retroactive, playing the results, nonsense, totally unuseful opinion making. Like, what good is that doing anybody? Other than to, oh, in the future, say what? You shouldn't run the quarterback sneak anymore? Based on one significant injury that I can recall in the past history of the NFL? I mean, really, I'm struggling to come up with anybody. And if I'm wrong, please, by all means, again, hit me up on social media at Locked On Mizzou. So I think that'll about do it for this episode. Hope you all are enjoying your Friday afternoon. Hey, hope maybe you're enjoying me on your little rush hour home. So get on home to your kids, give them a hug, and possibly throw down $20 and give the points for the Missouri Tigers. So next time, until next time, I am John Miller, and this has been Locked On Mizzou.